You are listening to...
I got my two Stanley Cup rings plugging my ear.
The Man Cave Podcast.
I'm a man! I love me!
With Jeremy Lambert.
Can't wait!
Yes, we're in the Man Cave. Joining us from Lebanon. Sam Ricciardi, it's our 200th episode here on Man Cave Podcast.
Wow. Wait, 200th episode of the Man Cave Podcast, our 200th episode together.
It's probably like our 100th episode together, at least.
At least, yeah. That would have been better if we'd actually know the exact number, but I mean, that makes it a pretty special occasion then.
I guess so. How's Lebanon?
Not good, I'll tell you.
Oh.
Obviously, you don't watch the news. I mean, we're hanging in there. Let's see. Hopefully, the situation will be safe still.
I noticed you didn't invite me this year.
What does that tell you? Hold on. My own family almost didn't invite me, so go figure. That says a lot. But no, I mean, for now, things are cool. I'm hanging around, you know. It's all cool. Fingers crossed that it's going to continue to be that way.
Well, don't die.
I'm really trying not to. Well, so far, there's no risk of dying till now. There's no such risk. Just a lot of political tension. Now, if it comes to nothing beyond that, we're all good. I don't give a shit about political tension, honestly. As long as I can safely roam the streets and get drunk. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, we're here to review UFC on Fuel 10, featuring a lot of submissions.
A lot of submissions. The spirit of the Gracies lives.
What?
The spirit of the Gracies lives.
I guess so. Main event, Fabricio Werdum, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. First round, you know, on the feet. Werdum got his shots in. Nogueira, he did good when he was pressing forward as Werdum just, you know, moved straight back. But when Werdum stood his ground, he landed some decent jabs, some good leg kicks. Werdum got him down and pretty much dominated on the ground, which was very surprising. I guess not too surprising, but still surprising. Just the way, you know, Nogueira, he never ended up in Nogueira's guard. It was always half guard or better. Nogueira, of course, tried his little half guard sweep. That shit went nowhere against Werdum. Werdum landed some decent shots on the ground. Second round was kind of the same on the feet, and then Werdum got him down. Again, avoided the half guard sweep. Actually got his back, and I was like, wow, really? Nogueira just gave up his back, and then from there, he locked on the arm bar. And Nogueira had to verbally submit. Submitted twice in his last three fights. This is just... I don't know what's sadder. Watching Nogueira get knocked out or watching him get submitted?
Watching him get knocked out is sadder. Watching him get submitted... Actually, you know what? Yeah, as a pride thing, watching him get submitted. But, I mean, after a fight like this, you at least can find consolation in the fact that his brain cells are intact.
Yeah, but I agree, but you're right. As a pride thing, like seeing him get submitted after, you know, just everything, you know, being the greatest heavyweight submission artist of all time, just to see him get so thoroughly dominated on the ground, it's still sad to see.
Well, seeing him get submitted by Frank Mir, with all due respect to Frank Mir, it's sad. Seeing him get submitted by Werdum, I really don't think people comprehend the discrepancies and levels. At this point, like, just as an absolute jiu-jitsu level, not MMA jiu-jitsu, Werdum is so far ahead of Nogueira. Now, as we all know, this doesn't mean much in MMA. It's about how you adapt your jiu-jitsu to MMA. But as we talked about in the preview, when they first fought in 2006, Werdum wasn't the fighter he was today. And while his jiu-jitsu was already truly world-class, and he was already a world champion back then, you know, he hadn't just adapted it to MMA. His transition game wasn't quite as good. And just overall, he wasn't the fighter he is today. Now, that's not to say that, oh, well, you know, I saw this coming or whatever. But at this point in time, with Nogueira just regressing as a fighter on the whole, and his jiu-jitsu just looking sloppier in general, and Werdum finally almost being, Werdum's MMA jiu-jitsu almost being on par with his, you know, just jiu-jitsu in general, this isn't too shocking, I don't think. again, we're talking about a difference between somebody who's a jiu-jitsu black belt who's done extremely well, one of the pioneers in terms of adapting jiu-jitsu to MMA, or at least modern MMA, because, you know, Hoist was doing that since UFC 1. But in modern MMA, especially at heavyweight, you know, Nogueira showed a lot of stuff as to how to work from guard, setting up triangles, getting sweeps, guard passing, all that stuff. You know, Nogueira is absolutely a pioneer. Well, he's a pioneer, just period. But for that particular purpose, he's, you know, he's also he's the pioneer, actually, in many ways. But at this point, you got to factor in so many things. A, Verdum is improved. On the whole, he's just a better fighter than Nogueira right now. He's younger. He's more agile. You know, that much is obvious. But more than that, not only has Nogueira regressed or just isn't training as regularly and isn't training as hard, but and you might think, well, you know, what does wear and tear have to do with your jiu-jitsu game regressing? No, it affects everything. It doesn't just affect your chin or your reflexes. It really affects everything. But more than that, this guy, again, Nogueira is somebody who's done, he's obviously a very good grappler, but he's done really well to adapt his grappling to MMA. But we've had years and years of tape to watch on this guy. Somebody, you know, for most heavyweights, like Dave Herman, it doesn't matter. He probably hasn't seen any of Nogueira's tapes. But even if you do, you still can't counter it because the dude is so strong on the ground. He's got terrific wrist control. Every time, you know, all Nogueira brothers' opponents say the same. Like, the moment they get, especially Big Nog, the moment that he gets wrist control on you, you're like, oh, shit. I didn't think, you know, he'd have that kind of grip. That kind of a grip. But Verdum is not your average fighter in terms of grappling. He's definitely not your average heavyweight, period. And he's by far the best heavyweight grappler out there. So he's seen Nogueira. You know, we know how the Brazilian guys are. You don't have to idolize Nogueira anyway to watch his fights. But especially for Brazilian fighters, they've seen him over the years. They've studied him. They tried to emulate him. And on top of all that, Verdum was fighting him. So he had more interest in tape study. So you know what to expect. That doesn't mean any of it is easy. But when Nogueira drops for a guillotine, I mean, that was, to me, that was the saddest part of the fight, when he dropped for that guillotine. I was like, really, dude? Really? I mean,
that was
if that didn't work on a beaten up, half knocked out Frank Mir, that was going to work on Verdum? Like, come on. It's not that guillotines don't work, or Nog has, again, he has a hell of a grip. But that was such a low percentage play, to use a stick and ball term, that it was never going to work, not on Verdum at least. And you've given up position and actually led to the end. Once again, I mean, he was going to lose that fight anyway, let's be honest. But once again, Nogueira makes the mistake of dropping for a guillotine and as a result gives up position and gets submitted a few seconds after, or at least maybe a minute after or whatever. He once again made that mistake. At this point, Nogueira's Brazilian jiu-jitsu game is telegraphed against elite grapplers. They know what to expect. For Verdum, I mean, Nogueira, the thing is, he's so active that sometimes it's counterproductive. Somebody like Verdum, who scouts these half-guard sweeps and sees them coming a mile away, he's not going to fall victim to those. In fact, it's not just that he was able to nullify them. He was able to counter them. Every single time Nogueira went for a half-guard sweep, Verdum landed either in side control or, as you just mentioned, at one point he spun and took his back, which was super fluid and fantastic. You know, you said, really, Nogueira's given up his back, which, I mean, you have a point. But to me, I was even more impressed with just the fluidity in which Verdum was able to do so. I mean, let's put one thing in perspective. You know, it's sad to see Nogueira get submitted like that and everything, but still, not anybody can do it. Very few can do it. So for Verdum to do it with that much ease, it really says a lot about his grappling ability. Not that we didn't know that. I mean, God knows he's got the grappling acumen and resume. But still, to go out there and do it against Big Nog like that, even at this stage of Nogueira's career, it's, at the very least, it's mildly impressive. I mean, even if and this being extremely harsh, at the very least, you have to call it just, you know, just impressive. And
yeah,
it was.
I don't mean to, you know, write off or discredit Verdum for what he did. I mean, as you mentioned, not everyone can do this stuff. Dave Herman, terrible example, but we saw what, you know, what kind of success he had on the ground against Nogueira. So Verdum, I do give him a lot of credit for just knowing basically everything Nogueira was going to do, being just a step ahead of him, and locking on that armbar when I thought it looked like Nogueira was going to be able to get his arm out and be fine. But, you know, he stuck with it and he eventually was able to extend it and get the submission. So Now, I don't discredit Verdum at all. I guess I'm just looking at more of the fanboy perspective of Nogueira, how sad it was.
Yeah, no, I feel you. One thing, because the camera angle was kind of weird on the finish, I thought maybe Nogueira didn't tap. And because he was yelling, I thought he was telling Mario Yamasaki I didn't tap initially, where he was just, apparently he was just cursing in Portuguese because he was upset that he lost. But at first I thought he was telling Yamasaki I didn't tap, and I thought, you know, Yamasaki might have messed up. But then when they showed, you know, on the replay, it was pretty clear that Verdum had his arm completely. And Nogueira didn't protest or anything. So there was that. On the feed, though, I think the fight did reveal a major weakness in Verdum on the feed. I mean, not in fairness, it was weaknesses we were aware of already. That defensively he's pretty shaky. Even Nogueira's camp said as much. When pressured, Verdum kind of, it's not that he crumbles. He just backpedals right into the cage. And there was one moment where Verdum backpedaled right into the cage, and Nogueira, you could almost see him literally and visibly loading up on his right hand. So he had his right hand, you know, as you're about to punch somebody, and it was up in the air for like 2 seconds. And instead of Verdum being like, all right, why don't I just punch him instead or jab him or circle out, Verdum kept just waiting and leaning one way or the other, where it was sort of like, all right, when are you going to punch me so that I can just try to avoid it? And that's not how it works. You can actually do something about it. So anytime you're circling right against the fence as if you're intimidating by somebody and he can just load up on his right hand and just pick his exact moment to unleash, then you're doing something wrong. That's A. B, whenever he tries to counterpunch, it's super sloppy. Like there was one point where they were just trading from close quarters and Verdum was landing and none of the punches actually landed from the knuckles. None. It was these trademark Brazilian, kind of like the inside of your palm kind of thing where it's almost like, yeah, it's something between a bitch slap and a punch. You know what I mean?
Remember when you did that shit to Orlovsky?
Yeah, but that was a pure bitch slap.
Yeah.
That was like, yeah, that was a pure bitch slap. Here he at least had made a fist, except that he didn't connect with the knuckle. He connected with the inside of his hand. So it's sort of like a slap punch. And obviously, those are not going to hurt, not to mention they're incredibly sloppy and inaccurate. So that's a major problem right there. If you fight Cain Velasquez and he closes in the distance on you and gets the clinch and you try to pull that shit, well, you know, enjoy your knockout. And I want to see Verdum against Cain Velasquez next. I really do. That's the fight I want to see. At the very least, we have the possibility of Verdum just, you know, that he's better than Cain at one thing. Now, he may not be able to implement it at all, and Cain is probably going to take, even if Cain does take him down, he's probably going to just rain down punches from ground pound, and not from ground pound. He's probably going to rain down ground and pound from like standing up in full guard and everything. He's just not going to allow Verdum to work. But at the very least, you know, there's a threat for Verdum. He's better than than Cain Velasquez at this particular aspect, and it's not even close. He'd still be a huge underdog, and rightfully so. And I don't even think he's going to get the chance to utilize his jiu-jitsu. But at the very least, Verdum is good in the clinch. You know, he's got decent leg kicks, and obviously a terrific, terrific ground game that is the best in the division. So there's at least that. Not to say that Junior Dos Santos doesn't have anything to offer because, you know, he's beaten Cain already. But, you know, we've talked about this a couple of weeks ago or a couple of podcasts ago. You know, we'd like to see them wait for that fight and just, why not give Verdum that chance? I mean, I think he gets clobbered because of his major weaknesses, defensive weaknesses, standing up. I think Cain just completely cleans his clock in the striking game. But still, it's a fight that I'd like to see. I mean, he's won 3 times already. There's Big Nog, there's Big Country, and I'm missing one fight in there. Who was it against?
The great Mike Russow.
Yeah, and there's Mike Russow. And I mean, you might look at it and say, you know, that's not super impressive, but it's heavyweight. You know what I mean?
You got to take into account a little bit. He also holds a win over Bigfoot. You know, he was the first man to beat Fedor.
Right. You can't discredit his entire Strikeforce run, basically, in spite of the loss to Overeem, which many thought he won. So, you know, in the past
he either won that or no one won.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with the expectations on Overeem coming off his Grand Prix win, where he was supposed to just kill this dude in a second.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Verdum has been one of the most consistent heavyweights in recent memory. There's no doubt about that. And when you look at how shitty the division is and how few heavyweights are able to string together a few wins, that's impressive right there. So, you know, Put him in there with Kane. I want to see that.
He still owed a title shot from beating Brandon Vera.
Right. This is actually true. And then Brock just left in front of him for no reason. Well, for money. But you know what I mean. And Verdum got knocked out by Junior Dos Santos. Yeah. But and you know, back then that, you know, we thought that loss was way worse than it is. You know, in hindsight, that wasn't, even though Verdum looked horrible and he was out of shape for that fight. In hindsight, even if they were to fight today, I think we'd all pick Junior to knock him out again. But back then, you know, that was so horrible that the UFC released him. I know there was, like, you know, contractual disputes and everything, but still. Anyway, what I'm saying
here is, he was
on
the downside of his career. Mauricio Verdum makes too much damn money.
He's on a, yeah, he's not there, meaning up. He's here, meaning down. And then, you know, he beats Fedor, and Dana White tweets a smiley face. So, you know, for that smiley face alone, you owe that dude a title shot. Come on. I mean, let's be honest. The real impressive thing about Verdum is that, you know, you might say, well, you know, Russell, Big Country, and Big Nog, they're not super duper impressive wins. But at the same time, the dude is making it look easy, which was something we were praising Junior Dos Santos for when he was getting the wins over these sort of fighters. You know, you're like, well, okay, they're not super impressive, but at least he's making it look easy. You know, he crushed Mike Russell. He completely clobbered Big Country. And if Roy Nelson didn't have the chin he does, you know, he would have gotten killed like four different times that fight. And he tapped out Big Nog. So at the very least, you know, if these are fights he's expected to win, then not only is he winning, but he's winning them with ease. So, you know, that says something right there. And I'd honestly be way more excited for a fight between Kane and Verdum than, say, Junior Dos Santos and Frank Mir, or Cain Velasquez and Bigfoot Silva. Honestly. So I think it's a really good fight in the heavyweight division, even though it won't be competitive. But the reason it won't be competitive, most likely, and we don't know that for sure, but again, on paper, is because Cain Velasquez is that damn good, and he's a difficult matchup for Verdum. Not because Verdum isn't a good fighter or anything.
It won't be competitive because Kane's going to hit him, and Verdum's going to drop to his back, and it's going to be Overeem and Verdum all over again.
If that were to happen. But
I actually think this happens if Verdum fights Dos Santos again.
Yeah. But one thing, though, if he does that against Kane, I don't think Kane is going to have too much trouble just following him to the ground. He might not dive into his guard or anything. But again, you know, we know what he likes to do. He's just going to stand up and rain down punches. Now, this would actually create some scrambling opportunities for Verdum. You know, I always say that Kane's top game, as overwhelming as it is, it kind of leaves opening for him to give up position. So there's that. But at the same time, there's a threat of him just completely killing you with ground and pound. So, you know,
I'd actually be more excited for Kane and Verdum than Kane and Dos Santos 3 at this point. I don't want to see that fight this quickly.
Yes,
and we've talked about it before. We've exhausted that topic. But
yeah, which is why I'd be more excited for Kane and Verdum right now. That's the fight I want to see. I think, honestly, at this point, I'm wishing Junior didn't land that spinning back kick, because that's what's making the UFC go for this fight this quickly. Because as we spoke about it, you know, when first happened a few weeks ago, he wasn't looking that good against Mark Hunt. And that fight had went the distance, even though Dana would have promised him a title shot immediately afterwards anyway. There would have been a better chance for Dana to just change his mind. Right now, you know, because of that knockout, they want to capitalize and whatever. They're going to just rush that fight. And I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope, like, maybe, you know what? Maybe we should just demand that Verdum gets a title shot on Twitter. This is what changes the UFC matchmaking process. So let's make that happen.
Well, I'm blocked by Dana, so he can't see my tweets.
Okay, everybody else, mass tweet Dana White. Ask for Verdum against Cain Velasquez.
I'm fine with that. By the way, I've come to the conclusion that Junior Dos Santos' ground game is not that good. He's just tooling a very bad Nogueira on the ground in practice.
Oh, wow. Well, as Chael Sonnen once said, you know, having a black belt from the Nogueira brothers is like finding a toy in your Happy Meal.
Oh, remember that was the thing, like, oh, this guy's ground game is so amazing.
Yeah, yeah, because in the gym he's, you know, tooling these guys. So,
yeah.
You know. Well, when the best jiu-jitsu artist in the gym has been submitted twice in his last three fights, maybe they're not so good on the ground on the whole. Now, we're obviously trolling, by the way, before anybody takes this seriously. But at least I am. I don't know about Jeremy.
I'm trolling as well. Well, we never believed that just because Nogueira says his ground game's good in the gym, it's good in an actual MMA fight.
Yeah, and we don't believe that just because Nogueira got submitted that, you know, he sucks on the ground either.
No, not when you get submitted by Verdum and Frank Mir pulling that horseshoe out of his ass again.
Again. The one thing, yeah, there's one issue I wanted to touch on. Though I guess if we're doing a Nogueira retrospective, I might, you know, talk about that in our column. But real quickly, there's one really important thing about Nogueira and his jiu-jitsu in MMA in general. The guy, it's really similar to Wanderlei Silva and Chuck Liddell in the striking game, or even Mirko Krokop. They tailored their game in a way that was really suitable for MMA for that time. You know, like Chuck found out what works, which was, you know, like counterpunching. He capitalized on a lot of people's defensive deficiencies, even though he had many himself. But he camouflaged it in a way, and it worked. Wanderlei Silva, he overwhelms you with offense. I talk about this all the time. Mirko Krokop, you know, a good sprawl, just like Chuck. Well, sprawl, Chuck had a far better sprawl. But still, you know, the
legendary concept
is the same. Legendary. Mirko's isn't legendary. And, you know, the concept was the same. Overwhelm you with striking. You know, it was working in Pride because of the ring. He really tailored his game around a way where he can, like, corner you the same way Wanderlei does. Set it up with leg kicks, you know, set up that high kick, corner you, go to the body in the corner. So they tailored their games in a way that worked for that era. And when people started improving and as they got older and, you know, declined as well, people started finding solutions for that. It's very – Nogueira's overall jiu-jitsu game is very similar in that regard. Like, again, he's terrific on the ground. There's no doubt about that. But the stuff he likes to do doesn't work in MMA these days that often. Like, you know, playing an open guard. Like, how many people can still play an open guard and win? Nogueira probably can against these lesser heavyweights, obviously. But at the elite levels. Even, you know, you can bring up an example like, you know, Anderson Silva against Chael Sonnen, but it still took him 5 rounds, you know, 4.5 rounds to submit Chael. And he hadn't come close up until that point. You know, Verdum and Fedor is the one example, but that was more like, you know, a good an issue of a good bait by Verdum and Fedor being reckless enough to take the bait. It's not like he had spent a significant amount of time in his guard or anything. Like, Nogueira had tailored his ground game in a way where, all right, from the top, he's really good. What he does from the top, obviously passing guard, getting mud, you know, looking for an armbar, even though it doesn't work as often these days, you know, the top game is different. But this you know, frantic scrambling game from the bottom, even though it makes for terrific viewing, like, you know, last night's fight, it was highly enjoyable. When they were on the ground and they were rolling, it wasn't, you know, M1 grappling, which is a term Jeremy and I like to use for horrible grappling when people are scrambling because they're awful on the ground. No, this was, you know, high-level jiu-jitsu, obviously. You know, you watch, I always bring up this fight. It's my favorite fight, my favorite heavyweight fight of all time, and maybe my favorite fight of all time, period. Nogueira, Josh Barnett won from Pride. You watch that fight. It was filled with these scrambles. It was terrific. But Nogueira was getting away with it against Josh Barnett. Even then, he lost that fight, although it was highly controversial. But, and even in that fight, he got caught with a knee bar in the last 10 seconds as a result of him just getting kind of overexcited in a scramble. Barnett just catches him with a knee bar, and you can see Nogueira just screaming. Like, it was such a great visual and a very climactic ending to that fight. But, you know, the clock ticked and the fight stopped before Nogueira tapped or escaped or whatever. And it was fantastic. And even yesterday, it was exciting and everything. But still, in today's game, against guys like, even against somebody like Frank Mir, and definitely against somebody like Verdum, and it's just not going to work. Let alone if this was being done in different divisions where the competition is much better and guys are much better. Like, imagine a welterweight that is not, sorry, that's my phone. Imagine a welterweight that is not called Daniel Maia trying to do that shit. It's just not going to work. And even Daniel Maia, he doesn't play in purely open guard anymore. Like, how often does Daniel Maia pull guard now and try to sweep or go for a triangle from the bottom or anything? So
that's because he's gotten good at just taking guys down and putting them on their back.
Exactly. It's not just because he's gotten good, but it's because he also knew that he can't just do that, meaning pulling guard and sweeping against everybody. And as you said, you know, Damian Maia actually has very underrated takedowns and a fantastic top game. But the point is, Damian Maia is not big nog. His jiu-jitsu is on a higher level in general. I know this might sound blasphemy to some, but that's the truth. The same way Fabrício Verdum's jiu-jitsu is on a higher level. Big nog, you know, the guys he submitted, it's awesome and everything. But, you know, the kind of fighters he submitted are great fighters, but they're not all great grapplers, and I think Mirko Krokop or Tim Sylvia. Again, let me be clear that Big Nog is easily in my top five fighters of all time. And he'd be second on, like, he'd be the second in my Desert Island fighter, meaning if I had to watch one fighter for the rest of my life, it would be Anderson Silva, and then it's Big Nog. Because to me, he's been in the largest amount of exciting fights. I think I've spoken about this before. Out of any fighter, period. Like, I always find it funny when we talk about the most exciting fighters in MMA, we usually think of styles as opposed to who's had the most amount of exciting fights. To me, this is why I'd name somebody like Ben Henderson on that list, you know, in WC alone and the Clay Guida fights and whatnot. You know, he's had so many terrific fights. Donald Cerrone, for example. No, but we tend to think of guys like Wanderlei Silva because of his style and everything, and because he produces knockouts, and Anderson obviously as well, and deservedly so. But Big Nog, the amount of great fights, and I'm not talking about, oh, an enjoyable fight. You know, his fight with Werdum was an enjoyable fight. But I'm talking about, like, you know, just classic. The guy, off the top of my head, I can list, like, the first Heath Herring fight in Pride was for the first Pride title was something fantastic. The second Heath Herring fight where he tapped him out with that Anaconda was fantastic. The Crow Cup fight, the Bob Sapp fight. You know, the guy managed to have a great fight against Bob Sapp, mainly because he was getting his ass kicked.
Yeah, I was about to say, he bumped all the time and then got the big victory at the end.
It was a pro wrestling match. It was like Shawn Michaels against the Undertaker. And then, like, and one of the most underrated fights of all time that nobody talks about, his rematch with Dan Henderson in Pride. Their first fight in rings, it was contested under weird MMA rules and rings, but their rematch in Pride was something absolutely fantastic. You know, like, and I'm sure I'm missing, the Crow Cup fight obviously is one of the greatest heavyweight battles of all time.
Even
pretty
the
much
Sylvia fight's
good. The
Sylvia
fight was one of the best heavyweight fights in the UFC. Like, can you name many heavyweight fights that were better than his fight with Sylvia in the UFC?
His fight with Couture.
Yeah, exactly. The Randy fight was fantastic. And even in taking complete ass kicking against Fedor, the first and third fights were phenomenal. So just off the top of my head, I listed God knows how many fights. Oh, and obviously the two Barnett fights, which are two of his best fights. I mean, the first Barnett fight is his best. And these are just... This is not even counting, like, the easy submissions he was able to get or his fight with Frank Mir. I mean, for one round fight, that was a fantastic fight. So the guy just I'm exhausted just naming the great fights he's had. So this guy, and this is, you know, not mentioning moments like him knocking out Brandon Schaub where nobody expected him to win and everything. So I love Minotauro Nogueira. Probably the only fighter next to Wanderlei Silva is just so universally loved. Literally, you wouldn't find anybody who dislikes these guys. But there's no shame in admitting that on some levels, the game at the elite level has passed him by. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not saying he should retire, by the way, because I really don't think so. And I'll tell you why. It's not that he's still not getting knocked out left and right. That's the issue number one. You know, we talked about it last week. Sometimes you and I and other MMA fans, we make it worse than it actually is. Like, how many times is this guy getting knocked out? You know, getting his arm broken against Frank Mir wasn't pretty, but still, how many times is this guy getting knocked out? Not that many in the grand scheme of things. Way more than he used to, because he used to never get knocked out. But he's gotten knocked out like twice in his career so far. Only twice. Now, granted, this is a bit disingenuous because he's gotten a lot of punishment outside of these knockouts. But he's still better than most heavyweights. And more than that, he's still going to put on better fights than most heavyweights.
I agree. But here's why I want him to retire. Yes, he's probably going to beat a lot of heavyweights. I don't want to see him losing to fucking Ben Rothwell and stuff, though.
He's not going to lose. That's the thing. If he fights Ben Rothwell, he completely tools Ben Rothwell. What are you talking about?
I would hope so. But there's always that slight chance, like Wanderlei losing to Chris Leben. Like, it just sucks.
I agree. It's not pretty. But then at the same time, if Wanderlei had retired against Chris Leben, we wouldn't have seen him, you know, have entertaining fights with Kung Lee and Brian Sand. And that doesn't mean that would have hardly been legacy affecting. I mean, Wanderlei would have survived without fighting these two. But... you know what I mean? It's sort of like, because it's the heavyweight division, you know, with Wanderlei, I'd be fine if Wanderlei retires because, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's in the middleweight or light heavyweight division, you know, there are other good fighters. Heavyweight, I think like, look at the heavyweight fights not involving, like, Dos Santos, Verdum. I would want to say Overeem, but, I mean, his fight have sucked in the past. But, I mean, his two UFC fights were fine, mainly because he got knocked out on the second one. Like, so if you look at beyond the absolute elite, the even, like, the so-called, like, even if you look at guys like Stefan Struve, who puts on good fights, don't get me wrong, but still, Shaq Kongo and these guys are considered, like, the best of the second tier. Their fights are often, like, awful. Like, Shaq Kongo...
Nogueira beats these guys, obviously, but again, exactly. I just don't want to see that one fight where this is where he loses it, and then his record has a loss to, again, Ben Rothwell on it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Big Nog is that, unlike Vandalay, he still hasn't had that, I don't want to say embarrassing loss, but that loss where you look back and say, how on earth did he lose to that guy? If you take it out of context, like if you didn't know that Vandalay's chin is just completely clobbered and whatever, and you're just a few years from now, you're just watching this badass dude knocking people out, and then you look like, wait, what? How did Chris Lieben beat him? Nogueira hasn't had that yet. I mean, Frank Mir, like it or not, he's a former champion. You know, Verdum is one of the better heavyweights around right now and probably the best heavyweight grappler we've ever had in MMA. So he still hasn't had that embarrassing loss. So I see what you mean because, you know, he could do without it. Like, if he bows out now, it's not a good way to go. You know, it's sort of like a passing of a torch moment, even though Nogueira's torch has been passed, you know, a long time ago. But you know what I mean. He's lost to another Brazilian who idolizes him. It was, you know, nobody felt especially bad or anything. It was a submission, whatever. The crowd loved him anyway. And, you know, that's that. So it's not a shitty way to go. But I still think... thing is, he doesn't need the money and he doesn't need to build his legacy further. And he doesn't even need the wins at this point. Like, what's the win over these guys going to do to him or do for him? But at the same time...
that victory over Stefan Struve, that's going to put him in the top five all time.
Right. So, you know what I mean? Like, it does nothing for his legacy and it does nothing for where he stands in the division right now either. Because it's not like he's suddenly going to be a title contender if he beats these guys. Or that he'd have any chance of getting the title even if he were to get within, you know, proximity of a title shot. But it's just that I still think he has a few good fights in him left. And I think the heavyweight division is so shitty. Like, just let's put it this way. People care when Minotauro fights, which is more than can be said about 95% of the heavyweight roster.
If they protect him, like if they give him, I mean, this is a, I don't wish this on Nogueira, but if they give him Overeem, then...
No, this is awful. This is cruel matchmaking.
Just bring back Krokop and just do Krokop and Nogueira too.
Sure. I mean, that's kind of sad, but sure.
Just get nostalgia fights at this point.
Yeah, nostalgia fights are cool because, you know, there's no sad outcome. Like, if Nogueira were to lose to... Not that people hate Stefan Struve, but, you know...
Or do Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson fight at heavyweight.
So if Dan connects with that right hand, though, that's... But it's at least, you know, it's still against Dan Henderson, so whatever. And there's still the possibility of Big Nog just taking Dan Henderson down. Like, Nogueira's jiu-jitsu could still work on Dan Henderson. And this is not a slight against Dan Henderson or anything, but I mean, there's a lot of people Big Nog can still tap out. But, you know, I mean, if he were to retire, I'd be fine. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I'd like to see him hang around for an extra few fights, provided, you know, careful matchmaking is in store.
We'll talk about this Nogueira column because I kind of like your idea of doing like desert island fighters. We might do that column instead.
Oh, that's awesome. I would love to do that. And we can explain why.
Yeah, so I think we're going to do that column instead this week.
So the one time I come up with a topic for a column, it's completely not on purpose.
Well, yeah, that's all right. At least you're contributing.
All right, cool.
Welterweight fight, Leonardo Santos beat William Marqueo. He won Tough Brazil.
Okay, can we move on? I'm serious. We have another card to preview, and there's not much to say about this fight. I'm sorry if I'm going to come off like an arrogant prick for our one listener who thinks I am. But honestly, I'm in Lebanon. It's a long day.
Here's the thing real quickly. Leonardo Santos, here's all you need to know about this guy. It took him – this dude's been fighting for what? Since like in the 90s, I think. He's been around for a while. Yeah. 2002, so not quite the 90s, but still, it's 2002.
Exactly building for the future.
Yeah, this guy's been fighting since 2002. He finally gets to the UFC. He has to go through tough Brazil to do it. Like, come on, you know this guy's not going anywhere. Sorry. Thiago Silva knocked out Fajal. This is a good fight. They just threw hands.
It was a good fight. Yeah.
Thiago Silva looked, shit, the best he's looked since, what, the Keith Jardine fight, maybe?
No, it's the best he's looked. Period, I think.
Well, yeah.
Because Keith Jardine has no chin, and honestly, I hold, even though, no, I think Feijão is a better fighter than Keith Jardine.
I'm starting to get worried about Feijão right now, though, as how good
maybe.
He is.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's especially good or anything, but I think he's just a solid fighter in general. One thing, I mean, it's sort of a fight I expected, but with kind of a reverse outcome, you know? But Feijão completely gassed out at the end
jitters.
Of the first round. Sure. I mean, what happened to him at the end of that first round? Because if you want to contest a fight in close quarters, meaning not necessarily in the clinch or anything, but just they were, for the most part, they were just throwing hands on the inside. If that's the way you're going to contest this fight, you better be more careful. You better not drop your hands as much as you did. And you better not fight at this pace if you're not going to be able to keep it up. If by the end of that first round you're tired, then sorry, dude, you're doing something wrong. And Thiago Silva was extremely smart in the way he's approached this because he kept throwing like these inside leg kicks, then outside leg kicks, even if they were fighting on the inside. And I mean, against a better counter striker, this is dangerous. Like if you try to do that against Machida from that distance, he kills you, which is what he did anyway when he fought Thiago Silva. But still,
that'd
but
be
in
a
this fight, it was
rematch.
Why would it be a sweet rematch? Why do you hate Thiago Silva? The dude just got a. He just got an impressive win, and provided he doesn't fail a drug test, why would you wish Machida upon him?
Because I love that Machida performance was so awesome. I'd like to see it again.
Oh, dude, he made Thiago Silva look like a zombie.
Yeah.
Like Thiago Silva, it was almost literally he was walking the way zombies walk in movies. That's the difference in speed and timing. It was really astounding. But in any case, so Thiago Silva, he was throwing a lot of, like, I mean, Feijão, he was contesting the fight in general just way too close. I mean, I understand that he was throwing these body shots, but honestly, in general, I'm not a huge fan of punches to the body in MMA. They're dangerous. I don't think the risk-reward is worth it. That's not to say that you never go to the liver or something. I mean, what would Sam Stout do without punches to the body? If you can do it like Sam Stout, I mean, Sam Stout, A, he's got a hell of a chin. So he doesn't care about getting counterpunched. And B, Sam Stout is extremely accurate and just throws better body shots than most and can flat out just take the wind out of your sails with a body shot. For Feijão, it's a 3-round fight. You're not going to wear him down with body shots. You know, if it's a 5-round fight, sort of like Shogun Machida, one sure. But what Shogun was doing in that fight was throwing kicks to the body, which is a different issue. I'm fine with that. But punches to the body, the risk-reward is not worth it. I'm not saying you should never go for them. I'm just saying you should be more careful when you go for them. Because it becomes very easy for your opponent to time you. You know, Nick Diaz had George St. Pierre a lot to the body. Some guys just have, you know, strong body. Like George St. Pierre himself admitted. I mean, one thing about GSP is at least honest about his performances. He was like, you know, I mark up very easily, but I don't mind getting hit to the body. I have strong belts, so I don't feel these things. You know, some fighters just don't feel it. That, I mean,
crunches obvious, he does.
Yeah, that must be it. But I mean, I'm sure if you hit George St. Pierre with a just spot on shot to the liver, he's going to feel it. But these, you know, pepper punches and just peppering punches, they're not. I don't think they were going to take their toll on Thiago Silva and that fight or anything. So, and Feijão just completely neglected his jab. It was non-existent. And he was too reliant on just being able to land, like, you know, power shots. And he paid the price. He should have fought. He should have taken his distance a bit more. Maybe just a couple of steps backwards. Nothing more. And on top of that, he definitely should have fought at a slower pace. Thiago Silva, that's what he wanted. Excuse me, not necessarily just a fast-paced fight, but these sort of exchanges. And it worked. And to his credit, I think the ending sequence was nice because he hit him like first with a leg kick, inside leg kick, then outside leg kick, then went to the body, and then with a knee to the body, I think it was, and then just switched to the head. And so he kind of like gradually just kind of like started just.
Garvin stomped him on the feet.
Did he?
Well, you know, Garvin Stomp, you start at the...
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, that's a decent analogy. Sure. All right. I'll subscribe to that. So, you know, he kind of just gradually took chunks out of him until just eventually finishing him. And it was a very good performance, good killer instinct, which is not surprising considering he's Brazilian. I'm just going to start that stereotype and apply it to every fighter. Look at the amount of finishes we had on this card, all from Brazilians.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the problem is with Americans.
Good win for Thiago Silva. Now he has to pass his drug test.
Yeah, that's the bigger test right there.
Yeah, that's really the bigger issue here for him.
It's in Brazil. I think the UFC will fabricate a way to make it.
Bill, he failed the one. His last fight was in China, and they still popped him.
But China is a strict country.
Oh, all right.
Brazil are like, what's inconsistent with human urine? Everybody's urine is inconsistent with humans here, so it's fine. I'm joking, by the way. I don't want to turn into Chael Sonnen.
It was marijuana last time, so.
Oh, okay. So it was an inconsistent human urine. Okay, fine. Well,
Eric
actually.
Silva. Oh, go ahead.
No, just go ahead. It wasn't terribly relevant. Just go ahead.
Eric Silva, when is anything we say relevant on this show?
Good point.
Eric Silva submitted Jason High. High went for a takedown. Silva stuffed it, spun to the back, locked on a inverted triangle, switched it to an armbar. Sweet submission by Eric Silva.
It was a pretty sweet submission by Eric Silva. He continues to improve. I want to see him take one of like a top 7 fighter, top 10 fighter, whatever. You know, we like Jason High and everything. We've spoke about this before,
but this is a bad matchup for him.
Yeah, he was just outclassed, let's be honest. And, you know, there was just Thiago Silva. Eric Silva was just way too dynamic for him. That was always going to be the case. Had just way too many ways to win the fight. And more than that, I think, though, it's tough to criticize Jason High considering he was never submitted in his career prior to that, but he really rotated the wrong way to defend that triangle. So it's kind of iffy triangle defense. I know it's not your traditional triangle, and because it's inverted and things are happening so quickly and you got to defend your arm at the same time because Eric Silva was kind of threatening that as well. It was kind of difficult. It wasn't necessarily straightforward to defend against. It was definitely not. But still, you know, submission defense he exerted wasn't the best. But, I mean, I think he was just outclassed, period.
Jason High says he could think of better ways to spend the last 8 weeks of his life.
Meaning he went to camp and everything and then just lost.
Yeah, lost in a minute and 11 seconds.
Yeah, I can feel his heartbreak, honestly.
Jason High, I'm just looking at this, like, you know, he had that long, long, long layoff.
Yeah, where people thought he just died or something.
Yeah,
if it wasn't for the appearance on Twitter every now and then.
Yeah, so he has this long layoff from September to July of last year. He fought 26 seconds in that fight, and then now he had a layoff from July to June of this year. He fought a minute and 11 seconds.
Yep, I mean, this dude is kind of cursed.
I feel bad for him. He's a good dude, but... Yeah, I want to see. I'm with you on Eric Silva. Give him like Tarek Saffiedine. I think he just dropped out of his fight with Robbie Lawler. So once he heals up,
yeah. Is Jake Ellenberger fighting anybody?
I wouldn't give Eric Silva that fight
because Jake Ellenberger is kind of like close to getting a title shot now. So it's risky giving him Eric Silva. But
yeah.
Just stylistically, that's a fight I want because that fight has the chance to be awesome.
That's a good fight if Ellenberger, like, loses his next fight or if Silva gets a big victory. But...
Yeah, or if Silva was, like, a title shot for Silva was realistic. Yeah, that would have been a good fight. But just stylistically, though, hypothetically speaking, I think that, you know, violence is in order in a fight like that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. If Carlos Condit or Martin Kampman get hurt here in the next couple weeks, give Eric Silva that slot.
I like how we talk about this not so casually as in, that's probably a distinct possibility.
Well, of course it is. Are you kidding me?
No, I know. I'm not critic. I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah, I mean that's why I brought it up. So.
No, absolutely. Well, we're hoping none of that.
No, I really hope it doesn't because I.
No, honestly, because there's a even worse way to spend the past 8 weeks than Jason High did. It's just to get injured right before your fight. You know, ask Little Long.
I don't want it right before the fight. I want it like you know 4 weeks out or something.
Oh, so you want it? Okay.
No, if it happens.
All right.
No, give Eric Silva some time to prepare.
It's fine. I get what you're
saying. It's gonna happen. You know, make sure it happens in due time, so you just don't have to cancel the whole damn fight, and you're left with Roy Nelson versus Stipe Miocic as the co-main event.
Yeah, and then you give Shogun to Chael Sonnen.
Yeah,
That fight is going to depress me to no end, by the way. I don't want to think about that.
Well, it's still... Somebody still has a chance to get hurt.
You know, Shogun feels good on Fox. Remember the last epic performance he put on? He'll be fine on Fox.
It's not on Fox. It's on Fox Sports 1.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so it's UFC on FS1-1.
Something like that.
Awesome. Okay.
Did you see people complaining at Dana? Like, oh, thanks. You're giving us this fight with two guys coming off the main event. Like, yeah, you're expecting... Or two guys coming off losses in the main event. Yeah, you're expected to pay $55 for the same thing this weekend.
Yeah, so be lucky you're getting it for feel lucky you're getting it for free.
And Danny's like, this is the best fucking free card ever, bitch.
I think it really isn't. Words.
Daniel,
have other fights been announced for that card?
I don't know what else is on that card.
So how can you call it the best free card ever? So if we're just comparing, like, if this is the only fight announced, that I can already say that the free card contains...
I know there's been more. Here's the card right here. You got Shogun against Chael Sonnen, Alistair Overeem against Travis Brown, Faber against Yuri Alcantara, Matt Brown, solid killer, immortal, against Thiago Alves. That's pretty much the top four fights.
That's a good card. I'd still take UFC on Fox 1 with Guida and Ben Henderson and Cain Velasquez. I mean, Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos won... alone trumps anything on this card.
Dude, so, every single card is the best free card ever.
That's a good point. Plus, I'm fairly sure, like, the card that had Ben Henderson and Nate Diaz, that was a great card
that
as
was
well.
An
I might
awesome
be mistaken.
Card.
But, yeah, it had, like, BJ Penn and
Rory McDonald, the real
Rory
main
McDonald.
Event.
That's that's true. And I think it had, like, one more... was Frank Mir fighting?
No, that
no,
was Shogun Gustafsson as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, Shogun and Gustafsson. I mean, like, the first two fights didn't end up being great, but on paper, that was a better card than this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Daniel Serafin beat Eddie Mendez. Daniel Serafin lost to CB Dalloway. That's all you need to know. Hani Jason beat Mike Wilkinson. He played the guard game. Open guard. Triangle choke.
Yeah. Well, it worked on that level.
You're saying Mike Wilkinson
anything,
isn't
is
very good?
My point. you just enhanced my argument.
They actually showed a lot of prelims. Did you watch them or just skip them?
No, I just didn't tune in for the prelims.
Oh, okay. Rafael Sunsell beat Von Lee. Good win for a Sunsell. Felipe Arantes, he killed Goto Fredo Pupe with a... elbows and punches from the...
Too bad. We like Goto Fredo.
Yeah, I think he's lost like two fights now. He's probably going to get cut.
I think he'll be kept around for his cool last name.
Adamar Grantante, Alcantara.
Bruce Buffer is going to be like, no, just please keep this guy around.
Adamar Alcantara beat Leandro Silva. Didn't watch this fight. Rodrigo Dan beat Mizuto Hirota. Didn't watch this one either. Chow Magalhães. I don't care if that's wrong. Beat Carlos Vermola. Vermola, of course, looked good in the first round and then completely gassed out and got submitted. Shocker. Antonio Brega Neto beat Anthony Smith with a knee bar because Anthony Smith is a generic name, and so he deserves to get knee barred.
They replayed that fight on the main card. So,
they replayed all these fights except for the two decisions.
Yeah, no. But oftentimes, like, when they're replaying a fight, I just go for a snack or something. I don't know why. I used to do that when I used to watch the prelims. Now it's just become a habit. I should stay tuned and watch these fights, actually, when they're replaying them.
I don't
but
mean
it's just
anything.
Become a habit. Sorry?
I said they don't mean anything.
No, but, I mean, you still want to... I mean, they might. You still want to watch... I still want to watch every MMA I can get if I happen to be watching MMA. That's not to say that I'll tune in for every, you know...
All right,
war,
I'm just going to throw
FC
this out
card.
There. Chow Magalhães is not going to turn into anything.
No, well, yeah, I agree. So I don't feel bad about that piss I took, I guess.
I understand on, like, pay-per-views and stuff, if you don't see the prelims.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but for these Field TV cards, whatever. Rafael Sunsell would be about the only fight that would have been worth it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, because Rafael Sunsell is actually good, and he might go somewhere in the division. So, yeah.
All right, so that's UFC on Field 10. We'll be back in 2 days, 2 seconds, with UFC 161. Awesome card to preview. I'm so excited for this preview. I think it's going to be great. All right, so we'll be back then. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Take care, everyone. The end.